Welcome into another episode of the Young Turf Podcast. Ahmed Ghafir and Mason Viner. Ahmed, we said we will be back here when the news broke on Jordan Seaton. It did. The Terps lose out in the, I guess, the last really a couple of hours of the recruitment, and they miss on their big target of the cycle.
Yeah, obviously really disappointing miss. Really felt like, I won't say felt like, because really felt like just the feedback from people inside when you talk to them, going into Wednesday, felt very confident. Wednesday, there was obviously some hurdles, and, once it became very clear that Maryland was the public enemy number one for Colorado, it was all-out pursuit there, which obviously, the expectation continued day in, day out that Jordan Seaton would ultimately sign during the early signing period. Thursday was another round of battles, Skip Bayless, they were talking about Jordan Seaton, why you should stick with Colorado, bring that back up on Undisputed. Day later, had all types of podcasts and talking about Jordan Seaton and Colorado, and kind of felt like it was, dismissing Maryland a little bit. But again, I talked about it for subscribers, what Deion was really pushing was obviously one, the NIL, but two, Deion's brand. And you kind of saw that in full force on Thursday. But going into that evening, still felt like that, Maryland was able to, they felt that they were able to secure or answer a lot of those concerns, be able to address kind of how Deion is approaching the process. I was told, Seton's family was kind of bouncing everything kind of off locks and whatnot, was being very transparent about the process. And again, I kind of went silent for subscribers Thursday evening because it was very, very close. I mean, the confidence had never been higher that Maryland was going to get Jordan Seaton. Honest to God, I was midway through an analysis piece and decided, I'm going to go get coffee real quick. I'll be back in 10 minutes. And went to get coffee, and it was within that 10 minutes when I got the text that said it's not looking good, 50-50 at best. So, in the end, Colorado won out. Took a couple more hours. Obviously, it's all in Mike Loxley's hands down the stretch there, as he was continuing to work on that through the cycle, down the stretch through the fall, and obviously that during his official visit, which Seaton did take that December 15th weekend. But again, just a really tough miss. I know Maryland's been in contention for five stars in the past, and I know a lot of feedback, Maryland can't be competitive in the NIL era. And honest to God speaking, I went to bed on Thursday night thinking, this was going to be a potentially huge win in the NIL era for Maryland to say, hey, we can compete, but we still need some more from fans. That was probably the closest. Might not actually be the case, but it really feels like it's the closest that Maryland came in a recruitment since Tariq Cashel Fields way back.
Yeah, certainly share the same, sentiment with that. It's just really, really close. And in the end, I don't think we've seen a guy like Prime in the recruiting space potentially ever, but definitely not in a long time that just has so much of his brand that's exclusive to him. It's not Colorado's brand. It's Prime's brand that you're going up against when you're recruiting. And I really had a lot of confidence in Locks going down the stretch. And just to say Maryland was that close. I mean, it's like getting to the 1 yard line and not getting the ball in the end zone.
Yeah, it was. I mean, unless someone else describes it to me otherwise, it really feels like that because all the intel, it was like definitely felt like that. But again, it was, very quiet down the stretch that last week. The efforts to kind of just keep quiet and kind of let everything kind of come to fruition. Because again, we kind of hinted at it the last show, but just the potential impact of obviously one landing that blue chip tackle, landing a local guy who spurned a lot of offers, and then obviously being able to solidify the offensive line, being able to turn to Malik Washington and say, hey, maybe you're next up, and kind of address all the concerns there. But again, it's a tough miss, and now Maryland will have to replace at least one more starter along the offensive line.
Yeah, they certainly will, and they picked up some offensive line pieces with the official announcement of the Terps portal haul.
Yeah, Alan Heron, they were able to flip over from Penn State. He came over from Shorter, played every game over his last 2 years, whether at left or right tackle. Assistant coach Brian Braswell did a really good job. He has a good, strong connection over it with Huron's camp. So Huron was able to take a last-minute official visit to Maryland, and confidence was kind of going through the week that Maryland was able to pull off the flip. Penn State was trying to, what they felt like, manage Huron being a little bit newer to the recruiting process, but I think just that connection that Brian Braswell shared with Huron's coach loomed pretty large there. So I think it'll be interesting to see whether it is left or right tackle, but obviously a definite tackle starter for Maryland next year. 6'6", 310 pounds. He has 2 years of eligibility remaining. This one, I'm not so sure that I'd pencil in as an immediate starter. Lo Ba, 6'5", 320 pound offensive lineman out of Georgia, Memphis native there. He inked with Maryland as well. He took an official visit, I believe it was December 14th. It was going into that Friday, December 15th as well. And then he committed after that visit, entered the portal, and I believe he was on campus within 2-3 days later. So was a guy that, you know, again, obviously with that size, it's 6'5", 320, again, you know, that has the size to translate to the Big Ten, and obviously just kind of being buried at the depth chart a little bit at Georgia. I think he's someone that kind of wants to play at his next stop, and I think Maryland obviously gives him a chance to do so. A lot of the feedback from IMG translated back and was good enough for Maryland, that all checked out. So again, I think that he's a guy that could step in and kind of fill in for one of those guard spots, likely replacing Corey Bullock, who was looking for a waiver, but just doesn't seem likely that a return is going to end up happening.
Yeah, and that kind of, you know, leads us to our next topic here, which is now looking at this offensive line. Obviously, DJ Glaze gets the Senior Bowl invite that he was looking for. That there was some confidence there that he may be back, but I think that that opportunity now in the NFL is solidifying for DJ here down the stretch. Where is Maryland looking, or how are the Terps looking up front for next year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think, I mean, I was the one that said that, you know, I felt pretty confident in Glaze coming back, and I don't really think, you know, I, again, was pretty transparent that the possibility of moving along the offensive line would help elevate his draft stock. Glaze even said it himself this week during bowl media practice, or bowl media ahead of practice. I believe it was on Tuesday, the day before signing day. So he was a guy, again, you know, a guy that could have shifted inside. If Maryland landed Seton, then that, you know, probably solidifies the left side of the line there. But I think kind of with that tackle spot, you know, Glaze likely, you know, probably having to be that tackle again next year. I think he's a guy that, you know, kind of takes advantage of that opportunity and accepted that Senior Bowl invite on Saturday evening, became the second Terp to do so alongside safety Bo Braid there. But in terms of the offensive line, again, you know, you're looking at least one more starter from the portal, probably a tackle. There's some confidence in Kyle Long, obviously, with what he was able to show. I believe he was able to play in 7-8 games this year. I believe it was all but 2 games this year, started in 2. But he was nicked up in a couple. But again, you know, he was a guy that was able to kind of push Amelia Moran for that guard spot going into the season. So I think he's a guy that is kind of able to step in to that void, but finding a portal tackle is going to be a big priority for Mike Locksley, for Brian Braswell, going into this next wave of portal entries.
Yeah, looking at it, you know, you would almost love to see them pick up a portal and another interior offensive lineman that's looking for that opportunity. Maybe, you know, they somewhat switched the perspective. You know, there's an opportunity probably to find a grad transfer tackle down the line, not just a portal guy, but really just trying to fill out depth. You would hope that, you know, Andre Roy might take that next step and be able to step into a role. Like they've recruited, you know, linemen, but at this point, you either need somebody to step up that you already have in the fold, or you have to look elsewhere.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think, you know, Roy's been someone that's kind of slotted at right tackle so far. So I think, you know, if he's able to kind of ascend into that starting offensive line, that Huron probably is that guy that slots into left tackle there. But again, I think, you know, they'll take a long look their portal options at tackle. But again, you know, those are, that's the premium spot. So everyone's gunning for them. So it'll be an interesting pursuit. But I think, you know, again, I think also, you know, what's kind of overlooked is, you know, Maryland being able to, he hasn't officially signed yet. A little bit just different of a process for him. But Josh Katlenberger, former Purdue lineman, started 7 games over there, 5 of them at center, where he's coming into College Park. He's already in College Park, actually. But he's, you know, going in with the intention of solidifying that starting center spot there. So again, you know, I think that was a pretty nice early pick up for Maryland to kind of address one big weakness there. But again, you know, looking at that tackle spot, I think that's going to be the key. But just felt like, you know, Thursday that the offensive line for next year could have been looking really good. But can't blame Glaze, obviously. You know, I think you have to look at the other side of the coin, where Glaze has a chance to become the third offensive lineman that Maryland has had drafted in the last 2 years. And that's not something that Maryland's had for, you know, very, very frequently. So I think that's something that definitely can't get overlooked.
Yeah, Ahmed, last point for me on the offensive line, last question for me for the offensive line. There was some talk about potential junior college targets on the offensive line. Is there anything there? Is Loxley going to kind of turn back to what brought him Jahari Branch and a couple others over his time in College Park?
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of just shifted that it'll be kind of portal from here on out. I think if Maryland wanted to do that, they'll, you know, Quay McBroom was a guy that from the JUCO ranks that, you know, tentative December 15th official visit that ultimately was canceled. So, you know, not saying that they 100% won't, but the preference will definitely be the transfer portal over the JUCO ranks.
Yeah, looking elsewhere in the portal, obviously a couple of needs that I think fans are maybe a little bit too on, but Ahmed, going as bowl season wraps up, as the portal entry window wraps up, positions of need, obviously corner, maybe another defensive lineman or edge rusher. And, you know, we already addressed the big one being the offensive line.
Yeah, obviously, like you said, offensive line, you know, finding one more corner. You know, they were able to host Teyon Holloway, a former North Carolina cornerback, for an official visit that December 15th weekend. But he decided to not even take that LSU official visit in early Jan. He signed with Louisville on Wednesday. So finding another guy there. But again, you know, Jalen Husky, who's already on campus there, I think that's a big win, early win for Maryland there. But you look at defensive linemen, you know, Grady Kelly from Colorado State, Maryland's offered him. Anton, gonna butcher this last name, excuse me, but Junchuk, definitely butchered that last name, but he's a DN from Albany. Maryland, but jumped in the mix for both of those guys. And again, you know, we talked about just bowl games, whatnot. You know, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what, if there are many bowl, or excuse me, post bowl entries for Maryland. I think you're more likely to see post spring ball rather than post bowl game, but it'll be pretty interesting to see just kind of who enters across the college football landscape to see beef up that defensive line. I think that defensive end spot, finding another guy to kind of put pressure on the quarterback and maybe, you know, have Kellen Wyatt say a little versatile there with the outside backer, DN a little bit, the way they use him there. You know, I think that'll kind of help Maryland. So I think that's kind of the one of the biggest concerns there. It'll be kind of interesting. I don't expect middle linebacker, despite losing Jeremiah Marcel and despite Jayshon Barham going to the transfer portal. I don't expect that to be a huge position of need, but won't be completely shocked if they evaluate that position. One more safety that can kind of help rotate in. I won't be shocked if they evaluate that. They've been, you know, kind of showing loose interest in a couple guys in the portal there that, you know, didn't really materialize into anything there. But again, I think the trenches and cornerback are going to be the biggest priorities for Maryland.
Yeah, and Ahmed will certainly have all of that coverage for you over on InsideTheBlackAndGold.net. Anything else on football that you want to get to?
Yeah, Maryland also signed. I know we talked about Jalen Husky. You know, they officially signed him, but MJ Morris, who felt like every reporter was asking Locks the day before, even though, or 2 days before, even though he wasn't signed, but officially in the fold now, 6'2", 205-pound quarterback, already on campus, has 3 years of eligibility remaining. So, you know, obviously with Talia Tagovailoa, with him opting out of the bowl game, you know, Maryland fans will get a chance to see Billy Edwards under center. Obviously, Loxley, he said, you know, don't rule out Cam Edge, you know, expect him to play as well. So, but, you know, MJ Morris, he's definitely going to be a guy that won't play in the bowl game, but, you know, looking ahead to spring ball, will definitely be one of the probably, I think a lot of people are looking at him as probably the top guy, maybe the guy with the edge going in, just depending on how he does grasp the offense. But again, just kind of seeing how they all fare going into that quarterback competition battle in the spring.
Yeah, I'm excited to see Cam Edge. For those of you that have been listening to the pod a long time, we had him when he was first committed to Maryland here on the podcast. So I'm looking forward to seeing him get his shot. You know, obviously a guy that came into Maryland when he was only 17 years old. So now after the redshirt year and this year under his belt, a lot of people have this job sold to MJ Morris going into it. I don't really think that's going to be the case. I think we're going to see some competition between Billy Edwards, Cam Edge, and MJ Morris going into spring ball. So it's going to be an interesting one with the QB competition back in, but it won't be the name slips my mind. The Oklahoma State transfer that Maryland brought in during the Randy Etzel time that everybody thought would jump the gun.
Dax Garmon.
Yeah, there you go. So we won't have that sort of QB competition, but somebody will emerge.
Yeah, definitely. I think, and I don't think it'll be something that's solidified by the spring. I think, we'll have an idea just kind of how they shake up with the order, I think, between those three guys. But I think it'll be something that goes into probably, maybe at least one, maybe even two scrimmages going into fall camp. But again, it'll be fun to cover. It'll be the first one really under Loxley. So I'm excited to see how that unfolds.
Yeah, over on the basketball court, the Terps pick up a much needed win, only a quad three win though, over UCLA, and Jameer Young put on quite the show the other night.
Yeah, I mean, it was really the Jameer Young show. Really did everything for Maryland, finished at the career high 37. I believe he finished top five most points in Maryland. I think it was fourth most points in a road game in Maryland history. But 37 points, 13 of 19 shooting, and 37 minutes. I mean, he did everything. And again, Maryland just really struggled to find much production outside of really Dante Scott, who was the only guy to contribute much. Again, 17 points, 54 points combined between Jameer Young and Dante Scott. But again, Maryland, they will continue to go as far as Jameer takes them.
Yeah, the Terps do not pick up a single bench point in the game. Juju Reese also only adds a single point, getting into foul trouble, eventually fouling out of the game. Kalem Swanton-Roger comes in the game and picks up three fouls in the snap of a finger. Definitely a lot of fouls called in this one both ways, but the Terps, you mentioned it, they'll go as far as Jameer Young will take them, and certainly will have quite the gauntlet coming up with the Big Ten schedule.
Yeah, they have that one last tune-up game with Coppin State. I believe that's next Thursday. So, and then, it's calendar turns and it's number one Purdue right there for the taking. So, with discounted tickets. But again, Jameer Young, I think, he's just kind of taking that on that ownership on him. And again, I think it's clear that, what the freshman, what everything going into the season just kind of really hasn't materialized yet. Julian Reese really just kind of struggled offensively, felt like he was just kind of stiff, could not find any rhythm. And again, five fouls, 22 minutes there. Maryland, you can make the argument that Maryland looked better with him on the bench than him on the court through a little bit of stretches in the first half. But again, just the foul trouble. And again, it's now not even Julian Reese, it's Kalem Swanton-Roger, who this is not the first time this year. Jordan Geronimo also fouled out 26 minutes. So they're definitely a concern. But again, Jameer Young, I mean, I think he's just been able to do everything for Maryland, and it's at will. And it'll be really interesting to see kind of what his ultimate pro projections kind of look like. But it just feels like, just offensively, he's just very gifted. And obviously, with Maryland struggling to shoot the ball offensively from deep, him knocking down four of the eight threes for Maryland in the win, again, just is another feather in his cap.
Yeah, you mentioned four of Maryland's eight three-pointers, but just to show it, the Terps knocked down 20 field goals the entire game. Jameer Young makes 13 of them. Maryland knocks down 21 free throws in the game. Jameer Young has a third of those. He hits seven of them. He also adds seven of Maryland's 32 rebounds in the game. Three of Maryland's six assists in the game. Obviously, the big number ends up being 37 of the Terps' 69 points in the game. You can't have a guy put a team on his back more than Jameer Young did, especially the way he also closed out the game when he had kind of gone cold a little bit in the second half.
Yeah, and again, I don't know that I expect a game like that too frequently from Julian Reese, but You know, again, you know, the supporting cast, and until they're able to really step up, prove their threat, you know, Dante Scott, obviously, you know, shouldn't, you know, I know he caught a lot of flack at the beginning of the season, but, you know, 17 points, obviously there, 4 of 11 from the field. You know, he was able to step up as well, to knock down a couple timely shots. But until the supporting cast is able to really, again, provide any threat, it's going to be, you know, Jameer Young by midway through January, by February 1, Jameer Young's just going to be facing the double teams day in, day out. So it's a concern for Maryland. And again, you know, we haven't really talked about the second half and what really felt like what a 20-point lead felt like just evaporate minute by minute there, and finally went down to a one-possession game there in the closing minutes. But again, you know, I think it's a little bit of a concern that Maryland just can't find anything else outside of Jameer Young and Dante Scott, really. And
yeah, you know, talking about really that,
just the whole season, though. I mean, just outside of those big three, I mean, you're really only seeing spurts from these guys.
Yeah, talking about that time in the second half, you know, one of the things I noticed when I went back and I watched the second half, trying to kind of put together the pieces of what ends up happening, is look, Maryland misses a couple shots there. And the number one thing, and it's been pointed out by many people, it's pointed out inside the blackandgold.net by subscribers in the forum, it's everywhere. The spacing on the floor just evaporates. It suddenly looks like there's no room on the court. Suddenly they're moving, you know, three guys are just standing on the three-point line on one side of the court and somebody's trying to drive the basket. When the offense was spaced well in the first half, you know, obviously it helped that Scott was hitting some threes and there was something else going on with the players, but when the movement stops in basketball, you're dead in the water other than the guy that has the ball is trying to drive the basket. And just a couple things on that. Deshaun Harris-Smith just doesn't drive the bucket. I think he could get really aggressive towards the basket when they need something. Scott similarly just wants to hit, you know, takes a couple pull-up jumpers there, and he had a good game. But guys just need to know what their shot is and what they can go with it, and that the ball will die if you just stop moving. It's like not running a route in football.
Yeah, again, you know, it feels like there's still – large stretches of the game where you just kind of question what offensive set Maryland is really running. So I don't, you know, when you talk about the floor spacing and whatnot, I think it kind of all goes hand in hand there. So definitely concerns there. And I can't say that I walked away from that game feeling that Maryland had taken the step in the right direction. Now, again, you know, winning away from home is tough. Winning at UCLA, especially after last year's game. I know Jameer Young talked about it. You know, I think can't overlook that. But just the picture as a whole is just very bleak. And you kind of think back, you know, beginning of the month, you know, Kevin Willow kind of looked to that three-game stretch at home saying, hey, you know, this is kind of when we expect to really hit our stride, and it just hasn't happened yet. So we'll see. You know, they get one more tuned up against Coppin State at home, and then, it picks back up. But just seeing, you know, again, what from the freshmen, just trying to figure out their rhythm, but just clearly is not there just yet.
No, and just to play the other side of it, because I agree mainly with what you think, but, you know, it is good to see some of the wins, the win over Penn State. Again, not really great wins, but a win in Big Ten play there to win last night, something that Kevin Willard's teams haven't been able to do. You know, they lost those games earlier to Davidson and UAB. So overall, you know, you do have to take away the positive, and you mentioned it, that they did get a road win over a brand name program that's, you know, now has a losing record, which is unbelievable after losses. I guess, you know, go back a week for UCLA. They lost to Northridge, California Northridge, and Maryland at home, which has got to be a bad look over in Westwood. And look, it's a positive that Maryland wins any road game, in my opinion, just given the last couple years. But the number one team in the country is coming in, and you can't sell the game out. That is just a bad look.
I was thinking about that. You know, when I was a student, you know, I've talked about on the pod, you know, when my 4 years, no bowl game, no tournament appearances. But even then, you know, winter break, I remember Maryland ran promos for like the wall, but it would be like $10 tickets for parents of students or friends of students. Like I would get tickets for my friends and stuff like that, and we would go. And I don't know that, but that was just for the like the student section because again, it's winter break. I don't know that I remember Maryland having to run promos for the general admission. Again, it's the number one team. And again, you know, I'm all for, you know, kind of eating the cost a little bit and just kind of recreating the atmosphere. And I think that's sometimes one just being back in that just kind of helps create that again. Because, I mean, let's be frank, that hasn't even been remotely the case in Xfinity this year. It has not happened yet. So it is definitely disappointing to see. But, you know, hopefully Maryland's able to pull out another win. And, you know, there's just some level of optimism with, you know, winning, was it 7 of 8 in the last 8 games? But, you know, we'll see. Also would say that if Maryland's able to pull out that Purdue win, you know, you don't have to worry about promos in the future, but, you know, game by game.
Yeah, I'll, you know, mention kind of my story with that is it's just, I can't even really fathom that they're running promos like this. You're like, you know, I go on Instagram and I see ads for Maryland basketball tickets because obviously I follow a lot of Maryland stuff on social media, Facebook, same thing, Twitter, the same thing. I mean, the fact that I'm seeing those for the number one team in the country, and it's not, you know, like a fluke number one team. Purdue has played arguably the toughest schedule in all of college basketball to this point. They've lost one game. They just beat Arizona. Like they're a big name at this point, power program that Maryland also beat in a great atmosphere at Xfinity last season. But it just makes you think of the days where, you know, Duke or North Carolina or any team in the ACC or even any team in the Big Ten, when Maryland was, you know, the number two team in the country, when they played Wisconsin in Mello Trimble's freshman year, and it was like the toughest ticket around to get into the building for that game, to where we are now is just, it's crazy. It's insane. And it's ugly. That's a bad look for Maryland athletics. And there's got to be some people looking at this right now on the inside, just, you know, shaking their head that's where they are. That's where they've put the program.
Yeah. I mean, you know, again, I agree. You know, and also, you know, make the argument again, you know, I know Willard talked about, you know, that opening stretch that the Asheville tournament is, you know, was something that Turgeon had scheduled, and it was just kind of, he inherited it. So it's not something that he could really deal with. And as a result, the home schedule and, you know, obviously the home and home with UCLA being away this year, the way the home schedule kind of set up. But again, I just think the lack of buzz in year two is the drop off has just kind of been a little bit alarming. But you know, again, you know, Maryland's coming off that UCLA win, be able to beat Coppin State. Again, you're able to maybe generate some momentum and just kind of, again, I go back to just kind of recreating the atmosphere a little bit and be able to kind of build off that. And, you know, maybe fans are more incentivized to create it again, you know, for, you know, the later matchups. So, but we'll see. So, again, day by day.
Yeah, there's time to right the ship, and obviously there's a huge opportunity to get that ball rolling in the right direction. One more tune-up for Coppin, and then, you know, we're all basketball here on the pod after that. So
yeah, it's gonna
hopefully there's some wins to talk about, because
the full football offseason at that point.
It gets real ugly when there's not. It's not fun to talk about when there's not. It's not fun to listen to, I'm sure, for the people that listen.
Yeah,
it gets ugly.
I mean, it's. I'm not sure that I want to recreate, you know, the second half of the Danny Manning era. So let's stay positive here.
Yeah, we certainly will try and do that. But it would help if some guys could start making some shots out on the court. Ahmed will be back on the pod later this week. Full bowl preview: Auburn and Maryland from the Music City Bowl. Ahmed's heading down to Nashville. I'm still thinking about it, like a lot of Terp fans are. Getting down there, and great opportunity to get a win over an SEC program and a pretty much a prime bowl spot. I was looking at the bowl schedule this morning, and Maryland, I mean, they're right there, ABC, middle of the day on the 30th. So great opportunity for Loxie and company to continue to build their brand and pick up a third straight bowl win. Ahmed, anything else to add?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously, you know, I'll be down for flying down Tuesday. So we got practice Wednesday, Thursday, if I'm not mistaken. So I will be at both. And yeah, if you don't see me at practice or you don't see me at the bowl, I'll probably be at Mother's in West Nashville. So looking forward to seeing all the Terps fans down there.
Yeah, should be a great time. Great city to catch some time around New Year's Eve. Ahmed just mentioned it. We'll have all the coverage on the Bowl over on InsideTheBlackAndGold.net. Make sure to subscribe to the site over there. Subscribe to this podcast where you get it. Give it a thumbs up where you can. And as always, thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Have a great holiday season.